this time, I'd like to introduce our first speaker.
This is, first one up is going to be Jimmy Jam from Hollywood, California. He's going to lead us on step 8.
I'm an addict to recovery. My name is Jimmy.
Hey, Jimmy.
I'm grateful to God and the program of Narcotics Anonymous. And I want to thank the programming committee for asking me to be a service. At any capacity, it's an honor. And I know that it's a tall order to do God's work sometime, you know, and I'm honored with the opportunity to say thank you, you know. And I was sitting over there, and I just need to get this out of the way. I just couldn't figure out why they would put the water right up next to the podium, right? I was thinking, people are going to walk up here while I'm sharing to get water, and it's going to drive me nuts. You know what I'm saying? And because I'm one of them guys, you know, that I've been on our programming committee for the last 10 years. I'm from the greater Hollywood area, the Southern California region of Narcotics Anonymous. And I've been serving on our committee for, you know, 10 years. And so, you know, I always, when I walk into a convention, I go to meet planning. I start thinking operations, put the water in the back, why is it in the front of the room? You know, I get challenged with my control issues, right?
It's working.
And I also fell on the principle that closed mouths don't get fed. Thank you, God. He answers prayer. I was over there praying. I didn't know I was exactly praying for that, but I was praying for some peace and some serenity. I'll tell you that. There's a lot of people here, you know, that came to support me, and you know, they heard me many times. So I'm humbled by the gesture. You know, I have friends that love me. I've just kind of tell you, like, me being here is kind of like, I know this is truly God's will for me to be here. I wasn't planned to be here. I got off the plane. I've been in London for an entire month. I've been in London, England for an entire month. I was at the London Convention of Narcotics Anonymous last weekend. I flew into New York yesterday or the day before yesterday. And as soon as I got off the plane, I turned my phone on because I was without cellular, you know, data for an entire month. And all my text messages started coming on and phone started ringing and it was back to reality, you know. And I got here. And I received a message from my brother, Frankie Bones, and he was saying he was on his way to the Ocean City, Maryland Convention, Narcotics Anonymous. I'm clean 17 years.
Yeah.
And this convention has a reputation all the way to the West Coast. Yeah. You know, it's known as the biggest convention on the East Coast, and this is the place where everyone comes, and it's quite, you know, has quite a great, you know, reputation of celebration, and they put on a great convention. And I've always wanted to come, and something's always caused me not to come. It's always been somewhere else I had to be, something else I had to do. And so I hadn't planned on coming here, and Frankie made one phone call. And a friend of mine that I had met many years, a few years ago by going to a convention, who lives in New Jersey, his name is Danny. He's sharing right now. But I want to give him, you know, he's a true NA soldier because he drove all the way from New Jersey to Brooklyn, New York to bring me here, you know. And so I'm honored, you know. I'm grateful, man, that somebody would go out of their way, you know, because I truly feel like a newcomer. You know, I've been gone for a month. You know, my hours are all messed up and I'm back in the United States of America. You know what I'm saying? I can finally eat some turkey sausage, you know. I was like... So, you know, I got to say that God is good, you know, and so I'm grateful to be here. And you know, step 8 is, and before I get started, I just kind of want to give you guys what I've been going through. This time last year, I buried my mother. You know, my mother died March 28th of 2012. And so I've been going through a lot of emotions, a lot of reflection the last couple of weeks, you know. I was a mama's boy. I was her only child. And my mother was my greatest, you know, she prayed for me. I'm here, I'm standing here, an answered prayer. You know, I am that moment of silence that we had. And I was my mother's answered prayer, you know. And so I stand before you, you know, very, 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 very convicted about the relationship that I have with God, the relationship that you had with God, that Narcotics Anonymous is a God-given program, whether you have a relationship with God, whether you believe in God or not. The second tradition does not fall short from that. It says very clearly that Narcotics Anonymous is a God-given program. And so I am here as a direct result of other people's efforts, other people's step work, other people willing to sponsor, other people willing to support the group, put money in the basket when it came around. You know, we're still putting a dollar in the basket in 2013, and we're putting a dollar in the basket in 1973, 1965, 1982, you know, and we're still putting a dollar in the basket. And so I want to thank you guys for, you know, at least supporting Narcotics Anonymous long enough for me to get here, and then the responsibility fell in my lap. And so for the last 17 years, I've been trying to repay what you have done for me. And I don't believe I'll ever get to that point, because you can't outgive God. And so I'm here, you know, and I'm grateful. And I want to thank, you know, I know what it takes to put on a convention like this. And, you know, I know they work real hard. So I don't want to, you know, if you see somebody with a badge, committee badge, walk up and give them a hug and thank them for being a service. You know, but anyway, I just want to share, you know, my topic is the eighth step. And I remember on this step particularly, you know, talking to my sponsor and putting all these different names on, you know, all the things that had come up for me. You know, I had to ask God to remind me. I would go to meetings and things would happen. I'd be in a meeting. Someone would share something. I said, oh, yes, you know, I got to put that on there, you know, because I got selective thinking. I got selective hearing. I'm an expert at self-deception, rationalization. And so I had to fight through all of that stuff, because the one thing I learned is that if I have a resentment towards somebody else, I'm going to be reluctant to put their name on the list, even though the amends is owed. And so our literature refers, it talks about that, about having to, you know, have to fight through my own resentments, you know. And the truth of the matter is, in the fourth step, you know, every resentment that was there, there was one common denominator, it was me. And so I had a part to play in every resentment, not necessarily saying that, you know, some things came up that weren't necessarily my fault, but it was the way that I reacted. It was the way that I chose to react. It was the help I refused when I was a child, when my mother was raped, and they offered me counseling, and I didn't want counseling. I chose to use drugs. I chose to use rebellious behavior. I wanted nothing to do with any kind of help, you know. And so these different, there was an invisible face, a man who had violated my mother, that I had to put on the list, and I had to ask my sponsor, you know, about this particular thing, you know. And I said I didn't have a part to play in this, and he said, well, how did you react? You know, were you offered any help? And so I've always benefited from the experience of a member of Narcotics Anonymous that has been further down the line than me, and sometimes even the newcomer, you know. One of the greatest things I've ever heard around here came out of the mouth of a guy who was brand new. He said, gratitude without expression is like wrapping a gift and not giving it. And so I've taken that to heart. It's like, you know, gratitude is something that just doesn't come off of my lips. It has to be the way that I live. The service is love made visible. You know, so I've learned things. I learned to value the experience of our members, regardless of clean time, regardless of sexual identity, regardless of religion or lack of religion. You know, that I understand that, you know, we are all equal. Anonymity allows us to be equal here. The principle, when it's intact, you know, is priceless. And unfortunately, I got here with many prejudices, you know, and so being prejudiced, and I'm not talking about skin color. I was prejudiced towards people with different social class. If you were highly educated, I felt inferior. I didn't like you, so I had a way to deal with you. I talked bad about you. I bought my esteem at the expense of other people. Our literature says that is, you know, it's shallow at best, right? So I came in here, you know, with the attitude, and I got to say this, you know, just to identify a little bit. I got here at 29 years old. I was coughing up that green and yellow liver bile. I had blood coming out of every orifice of my body. I had a seizure at 7 days clean. I had a very violent detox. Active addiction was coupled with finding ways and means to get more. There was a lifestyle that was attached to my choices and my decisions, and so that I harmed a lot of people. In Southern California, when I was growing up in the 80s, as a teenage boy, the gang community and the gang culture was very, 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 it was moving through our city at a rapid rate. And so I was always involved with guys that had fast conversations for slow thinking people. You know, I hung out with hustlers, guys that wore Jerry curls and croaker sacks and knit kickers. I was attracted to, you know, guys that just, that they had, you know, they had the hustle. And I fell into a certain lifestyle. And with that lifestyle, there was a lot of violence that accompanied active addiction for me. I was physically and emotionally and verbally abusive to my girlfriends in active addiction. There was a lot of things that I did even as a child. I became very rebellious towards my mom and the guidance that my mom and dad had tried to, you know, instill in me. And so there was, the point I'm trying to make is that addiction drove my life for many, 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 many years. And just because I got clean, it doesn't mean that I didn't hunger and thirst for things that weren't good for me. So the list continues to grow. Right. And so what happened is that I had to go back all the way back. I had to go all the way back, you know, and in order to go back, I had to ask a power greater than myself, you know. And I just want to read this real quick out of the Step Working Guide. It's just the first line up in here. It says, to this point, the steps have focused mostly on repairing ourselves and our relationships with the God of our understanding. Beginning with the eighth step, we bring other people into the healing process. People we harmed in our addiction, you know, and I harm many people, but most of all, I harm myself. So, you know, it was good. I was sitting around with the guys and we were, you know, had breakfast this morning and, you know, we started, you know, tossing the topic up, you know, and first principle that came out, forgiveness. Larry T gave me forgiveness. Forgiveness. And the beauty about recovery in Narcotics Anonymous is that I had learned to understand that if I follow my predecessors and I seek the freedom and the joy that I see them enjoying, if I see it, I can be it. And the step process is the most loving thing that an addict can do for himself, right? The most insane, the craziest display of insanity is to be a member of a 12-step program and not work the 12 steps. Right? So I understood that I needed to forgive other people. And it was very difficult, you know, because I had an ego, a lot of arrogance, a lot of self-righteousness. I didn't want to, you know, to me, it was, I lived my life upon being a victim. It was easy to justify my behavior and my actions as long as I had an excuse for why I was doing what I was doing. Poor me. You know, men, we suffer from PMS. Poor me syndrome, right? Power, money, and sex, yes, but poor me syndrome. And so it was easy to get here and, you know, blame everybody. And I was provoked to think differently when I got here. I was challenged by other people in recovery. The principles of Narcotics Anonymous told me that I wasn't a victim anymore, that I was a volunteer, you know, that through my inability to take personal responsibility, I was actually creating my own problems. And as long as I was blaming you, I had no power to do anything. But once I took responsibility for my actions, then I could bring that to God and God could help me make it right. And I had to fight through a lot of resentment on the list. You know, there was things and people that I put on the list, and I'm grateful for my sponsor because I wrote the list down and he said, if you just think about it, just put it down and we'll sort through it later. If you think about it, just put it down and we'll sort through it later. And so there was a lot of things that I put on the list, you know, a lot of men's that I was willing to make. I put them down. I figured this is going to, and there was a lot of names that came off of the list. Thank God for sponsorship. You know, because he told me there's certain things where this would injure them or others. And you are one of those others. And you don't need to be going to prison, you know, trying to, you know, you're not going to do anybody any good. You know, so there's certain things that a way around. I had to seek the guidance of somebody else that had experience, strength and hope, you know. And so I put the names on the list and we went over the list and went over the list. And, you know, it's very difficult to talk about the eighth step without talking about the ninth step. But I'm going to try to stay, you know, to the eighth step and continue to talk about, like, you know, forgiveness. And my understanding of forgiveness today is that you forgive the person even if the debt is still owed. And that calls for a certain amount of spiritual maturity. You know, it talks about in our literature that at this point, we're supposed to be more understanding as opposed to being understood. By the time my mother passed away last year, I had made amends to my mother, and there was many times that I had to draw upon that particular principle of being understanding as opposed to being understood, because my mother and I, you know, she was, you know, I was her only child. My father died when I was 20 years old. It was just me and mom's for a long time. And, you know, my mom, we had a way of, I don't know how to say it, but, you know, we would have arguments, right? And they say that, you know, how come, you know, your parents, you know how to push your buttons? And someone said, you know, because they installed them, right? So, so there was a lot of times that I would come in conflict with my mother. And I had to come to understand that my mother's not going to change. That it's my position to be more understanding as opposed to being understood. You know? And one of the things that I learned about me in my fourth step is that I'm very controlling. You know, I'm the guy that wants to be right all the time. You know, I'm the one that doesn't want to make amends. I want to be right all the time. And our literature says that we come to a place where we allow other people to be wrong. And being in a position to where, you know, you come into conflict with people, and even my own family here in Narcotics Anonymous, I'm very vocal, very convicted about my belief systems in Narcotics Anonymous. I've been a service ever since I had 30 days clean. I've served at the region, I've served in the area, I've served at many different levels in Narcotics Anonymous, and unfortunately, sometimes we have differences of opinion. And so what happens is that I end up having to make amends to people because I become arrogant. Sometimes I manipulate, I want to drive home my own personal agenda. And so I had to start falling back on being understanding as opposed to being understood. You know, and I would try to listen to people with an open mind, and I would try to invite my spirit into like saying, you know what, let's try somebody else's way. Because this type of stuff, man, you know, for me, it really helped me to heal, to understand that when I was able to forgive you and forgive other people for the things that had started to happen in my life, that people, because that sixth and seventh step is so powerful that there was no room to wiggle out of anything. I had to take a hard look at my defects of character, and it freed a lot of you up, you know, because I would, you know, I had a lot of venom in my heart, you know, prior to getting clean. And then when I got here, you know, I started taking your inventory after a period of time, you know, and I realized that taking your inventory is not going to serve me as well as taking my own. And so, you know, after a period of time, you know, I realized that, you know what, the more forgiving I was towards others, the more forgiving I was towards myself. And holding resentments is a painful process, because, you know what, it hardens my heart. And it keeps me from inviting you into my spirit and allowing me to see the God in you, regardless of our belief systems, regardless of whether I agree with you or not. I've come to a place in my recovery that even though I don't agree with some of the things that people say from this podium, it's my responsibility to go up and hug them anyway and tell them thank you for being a service. You know, I want to lead by example. I tell my sponsees, because my sponsor used to tell me, you need to go thank the speaker. And I'm not saying that because I wanted hugs after the meeting. That would be wonderful. But the truth of the matter is like I want my sponsees to follow what they see. And if I sit back and I tell them to do something that I'm not doing, then I'm just being a hypocrite. You know, and we lead by example around here, you know, and so, you know, I started to understand that, you know what, that I had to, and you know, there's some funny stuff that happens here in recovery. I remember being in a meeting and I wasn't the speaker, but it was an 8-step meeting and I raised my hand in the meeting and I was just clowning around and it was back home, you know what I mean? And they say familiarity breeds contempt, you know, it's very hard to, you know, to get a lot of accolades in your own backyard, but you know, when you travel abroad, you know, people love you, right? But they ain't got to live with you, right? So, you know, what happened is that, you know, I was in this meeting and I was sharing, you know, jokingly, I said, you know what? This is a big meeting. I know I got to be on somebody's 8-step list in this room, you know what I mean? And I was just clowning around. And there was a guy who had more clean time than me that walked up to me after the meeting and approached me with an amends. And I got to tell you that anyone that's ever made an amends towards me, I've honored it. Because I know, who am I? Do I want mercy or do I want justice? If I want justice, then justice needs to be served upon me first. And so what I really want is God's grace and mercy. And so why would I have anything else to, you know, it takes courage to walk up to somebody. You know, it takes true courage. Our literature says true courage is not the absence of fear, but rather the willingness to walk through it. So I honored his amends, gracefully, hey, you know, thank you, brother. You know, like, you know, it's all good. You know, it's water under the bridge. You know, and I don't know what's going to happen, and I don't know what's going to take place. I just know that my responsibility is to have the willingness to put the person's name on the list, to put, you know, whether it's whether it's a school, whether it's the police department, whether it's, you know, an entire city, you know, whatever the circumstance is, you know, I need to put if I order the amends, put it on there and let God deal with it later. Because God will create the opportunity. My responsibility is to make the list, you know. And it's as I've been clean and spiritually matured, and I believe that sometimes that God is preparing me to deal with certain circumstances. Not everything's going to go smooth. Not everything's going to be the way that I want it to be. Sometimes it's gonna be heartbreaking. You know, I've had the attempt to make amends to somebody who was very dear to me for many, many years, somebody that I did a lot of harm to, and she wanted nothing to do with me. But her name was on the list. Did she owe me some amends? Sure. But her name was on the list. Because it's not my responsibility to look at what she needs to do for me. My responsibility is I'm the one in recovery, and I need to put her name on the list. Because it's the amends that I owe, that I need to clear my backyard. Why? So that God could use me. I need to come to terms with the fact that, you know, I want to make things right with other people. I don't want to walk into a room and have, you know, all this stuff hanging all over the place. And every time I see somebody that I own amends, that I want to dip out of that meeting. Now I'm uncomfortable because I don't have enough courage to walk up to somebody and say, you know what, I'm sorry for what I did. How can I make it right? You know, it's not just about saying I'm sorry. It's about not doing the behavior anymore. And I've done that before. I've tried to make the amends and then did the behavior again and felt terrible about who I was. I feel like I'm a hypocrite. Because sometimes we don't get it right. I had good intentions. I'm not going to do that anymore. But I still have been driven by lust. I've been driven by, you know, things that aren't good for me. You know, I say that I'm not going to act this way again. And then on any given day, bam, I'll be way left of God, and I'm thinking about me, and then I end up doing the same thing. Name goes on a list. You know, and you know, I'll just read a little bit, man, because I'm a true believer in our literature, right? And the eighth step is not easy. It demands a new kind of honesty about our relations with others. The eighth step starts with the process of forgiveness. We forgive others, possibly we are forgiven. Possibly we are forgiven. It don't mean that we're going to be forgiven because we forgive others. It's my responsibility to stay in forgiveness whether they forgive me or not. Finally, we forgive ourselves and learn how to live in the world. By the time we've looked through our defects of character, by the time we've humbly gone to God, by the time I've made a searching and fearless moral inventory, by the time that I've turned my will and my life, my actions, my thoughts over to the care of God, by this time, we have become ready to understand rather than being understood. That's the level of maturity that I've always wanted. I'm not saying that I always have it, but that's something that I've always wanted. And I know that I practice it more often than not these days. You know, the most loving thing you could do for somebody is to listen. To allow somebody to feel like what they're saying is worthwhile. To have a level of understanding. You know? It's not easy to sit back when when I have all the answers, when I want to be a look good, you know? And to allow somebody their process. Because you guys love me through all of the stuff, that all the process that I went through, you know? Because I'm one of them guys, man. I'm an N.A. purist, not an N.A. tourist. You understand? Like, I'm here. Like, I've been here. I was one of those guys that, you know what? If you said clean and sober, I told you put $3 in a basket, one for each disease and one for confusing the newcomer. You know what I mean? Like, I was very, you know, I was real quick with my tongue to, like, you know, really, you know, today I have a more loving heart. You know, I understand that everything doesn't need to be said. It doesn't necessarily be said by me, and it don't necessarily need to be said right now. So I've taken some time to grow and allow myself the process of the steps and sponsorship and love and a relationship with God. And I've approached things differently, you know, and I look up to people and I try to learn from my predecessors and the people that I want to emulate, you know, all have a strong relationship with God, you know. And God is tender and he's loving and he's caring. And sometimes he's tough. Sometimes he allows me to feel the feelings that I bring into other people's lives so that I understand what I've done. You know, it's not easy living in God's will. Doing the right thing doesn't always feel good. Doing the right thing doesn't always feel good. But I understand that whatever's in front of me is not bigger than the God that's behind me. And the power that when I tap into that you know what, this time next year, I'm going to have a whole new set of problems. When my mother died last year, man, my heart was broken. I went to meetings, I couldn't hear anything. But I went to meetings anyway. When you're left with nothing, God becomes everything. I don't have any siblings really from my mother. I have half brothers and sisters, but I'm not close to any of them. And I felt very alone, and I felt very, very, it was painful. The grieving process, you know, and I leaned on you guys, and people called me from across the country and reached out to me and left me messages, George and Kathy and Richie, and people prayed for me. They heard me share about the process up until that point. I talked about it because I was my mother's caretaker. My mother died from lung cancer. I watched this woman, this independent, this giant of a woman, start to lose her independence. And it was painful to watch my mother struggle. It was painful to watch my mother die. It was painful to, like, pick my mother up off of the floor when she couldn't get up off of the floor. And I cried. My mother's name was on the list. And the steps allowed me the process of taking her name off of the list. Because I was able and willing to make amends to my mother, God created an opportunity that we gave my mother 16 years of serenity and peace before she died. I was in the hospital all along with my mother when she passed away. She died knowing that I was a member of Narcotics Anonymous, that I had a relationship with God. She died knowing that I was going to be okay. I finally got to maybe give back some of what I stole from my mother. The peace and the serenity and the dignity and the pride that I took for her from so many years. That little by little, somehow, some acts of kindness, some people saying, "You have a wonderful son. Your son is a good man." You know, my mother would come to a meeting, and back in California, we do it a little different. We celebrate by giving cakes, and my mother gave me a cake. And I remember on my third year birthday, my mother came to the meeting, and she asked if she could say something, and the group kindly let my mother say something, even though she wasn't a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And she said that she had a gratitude list, much like we do here, and at the top of her gratitude list was the program of Narcotics Anonymous because it gave her son back.
Yep.
That's the kind of stuff that you can't buy, you can't pay for. You know, recovery is a priceless gift. You know, our experiences... I think of all the people that I harmed, man, all the faceless, I became an asset as opposed to a liability. You know, where I would go places and the people that I would run around with and just, you know, I remember being a teenager, just walking into the store with all of my friends and just taking stuff and just terrorizing the clerk and just breaking the window for no apparent reason, just doing absurd, crazy acts of mayhem for no apparent reason. Other than to thrive on negative attention, because negative attention is better than no attention at all. And trying to learn that I was trying to be accepted by a group of guys who didn't care about themselves, and they were misinforming me anyway. And so, today I try to be an asset. I try to be an asset. I try to support Narcotics Anonymous financially. You know, there's certain things you can't do. You can't walk back in. You can't just go and say, I stole this money. You know, there's certain things that, you know, but it's important to make a direct amends wherever possible. But I know the importance of, like, sponsorship and listening to my sponsor, because although I have good intentions and I may be willing, you know, it's maybe not, it might not be God's will for me. And so I understand that I could do better on this side than I can on that side. Thank you. I don't really have much more to say. I'm excited to hear about the eighth tradition. I know that if you're in this room and you're hearing about the eighth step and the eighth tradition, that you're hungry for recovery. I know that, you know what, steps and traditions, you know, it'd be easier to be in another meeting where they're talking about, you know, love or lust or relationships or, you know, the pain outweighs the pleasure, you know, secret lies and alibis, right? There would be no room in this here. It would be packed. I would sit in the aisles. It would be everywhere. Step 8, tradition 8, it's right there. The meat, potatoes, and Narcotics Anonymous are steps, you know, our best guarantee against relapse. I never want to go back to where I came from. I never want to go back to the pain and the suffering of active addiction. Oh, see, they're turning the lights out on the step meeting. Oh, man. I just want to tell you that God's been very, very good to me, man, and I'm really excited to be here. It's my first time to Ocean City, Maryland. I'm going to take away with me more than what I bring. God made this possible for me to be here, you know. It's what a way to end a wonderful trip, you know, being away from home. I've been away from all my conveniences. It's very, very humbling. I feel like a newcomer right now. I'm in a room with 6 other guys. We're sharing one bathroom, you know. That's how I was when I was new, man. Let's go to the convention. I'm sleeping on the floor. Let's go. I didn't care. There was no ego involved. I just wanted to be in the building. You understand? I don't want to be left out. I don't know about you, but I don't want to hear about what happened on the corner. I want to be on the corner, right? My man Dale, I love you, brother. I'm going to say this. A good friend of mine says this back home, man, and it's something that's always touched my heart. He said, if you be an addict of my kind, I will pray that you don't use. But if you use, you better pray that you're not an addict. Thank you for letting me share.
Let's thank Jimmy again for coming out here and sharing with us. And at this time, I'd like to introduce our second speaker. This is Dean F. from Central Maryland, and he'll share on the eighth tradition. Welcome.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dean. I'm at it. This is a little emotional for me, you know. Just coming around here, man, not knowing nobody and developing a whole lot of relationships. You know, from Baltimore City, man. Central Maryland, law. The Bay Area. South Potomac.
Only girl.
Because I knew it was important for me when I first got here, man, in order to stay here, not to recover in no box. You know, it's always important to kind of like broaden the base, man, so I can kind of like grow in this process. You know, I thank the subcommittee for giving me the opportunity to come out here and share on the eighth edition. You know, and my home group is called It Works High and Wide. We out in Central Maryland. We meet every Monday nights. We have 1-12 step and tradition meeting. We 15 minutes from D.C., maybe 10 minutes from D.C., and 30 minutes from Baltimore. So if y'all ain't doing them, come on down and get some of that. You know, we're a diverse group. You know, we got people from all walks, doctors, lawyers, you know, school teachers, people from the streets, you know, country, county, whatever your flavor is, we got it there. Whatever your flavor is, we got it. You know, and I was in the main meeting yesterday, you know, and my aunt called me up. And she was like, "Dean, your aunt just passed." You know, and I was going through the motions of my aunt dying. You know what I mean? Because sometimes in this process, it's like, God, you know, I just lost my father this time last year with a sudden heart attack. You know, and I lost like 3 family members last year, back to back to back in a 30-day period. You know what I mean? But I thank God for the feelings. You know, I was like talking to my aunt. The problem was like, you know, you want me to, before I can get it out, she was like, "No, you're at Ocean City with them NA people. You stay your ass out Ocean City with them NA people. Because they've been keeping you clean for a long time. We can't do nothing for you." That's why I come with the third period value, one act helping another. You know, I was at the water, man, like thanking God, man, you know what I mean? Because they grateful for not calling numbers too. All the things that I put my family through. You know, going out to institutions to see you, the sleepless nights, and stuff like that, man. I remember this last time I was locked up, you know, and remember my aunt came and seen me, and my 77-year-old grandmother was walking across, struggling to get to see me. And I felt this sense of guilt. You know, and I started seeing people like get banked and beat up and stuff like that. You dig? And I started feeling empathy for people. I don't know where the hell that came from. I started like feeling like I was like powerless over my feelings. I remember it was like 2 weeks ago, man, my sentence. Champ say face when the cells pop. I wish your dude over the tear. So when the cells pop, that's what I proceeded to do. I grabbed Slim by the back of his shirt and by his pants, and I hoisted him up over the tear, and I sat back, and I watched. It was like it was in slow motion this time. And when the kid hit the concrete, man, it was like the first time I felt shame, guilt, remorse. I've been in institutions since I was 14 years old, man. I've been from T-section, JI-900, N-N-O, you know what I mean, the cut. I've been in institutions since I was 14 years old, man. But once I seen this happen this time, this is the first time I felt shame, guilt, remorse, anything like that. I said that first honest prayer, man, "God, can you please help me be a different person? I don't want to be that guy no more." But it's nothing about when you got them reservations. And when they released me, man, I went down off the campus to show them how good I look. They said, "Yeah, it makes you look real good. Take this package." I don't give out no testers. I am the tester. Yeah. I took that first blast of dope, went down. I went up on 58th and got me some coke. I found myself walking 10 o'clock at night with 10 homeless people. The homeless people started going on. You know, I'm looking at the homeless like, "Where y'all going? Y'all leaving you? You been smoking all night, now y'all leaving?" I went back to that abandoned house on 57th Street. It was needles everywhere. It was piss on the walls. It was rats running around. It was feces on the floor. At the end, all my niggas came through like, "God damn, how did you get here?" I remember waking up that next day, man, I was walking down 4th Street in broad daylight, hitting a stem. That's amazing, man. When you caught up in that act of addiction, man, the shit that's insane seems to be sane. And I'm walking down 4th Street hitting a stem. The guy like Ned DeWino called me crackhead. Thank you. I couldn't send back to him. At that point, I began to inventory my life. See, there was never no humility there. I heard about Narcosis over at Steelside in 1989. H and I came in, was sharing, and woo. And I walked him out of jail. I slapped high fives in the cafeteria board. We were going to Tampa, we were going to get some money. And I sat down, I looked at H and I said, old as y'all is, y'all should be ready to stop using. I'm kind of talking about being denial. I was in refusal. This is what it's going to be. But when Ned DeWino called me a crackhead, man. See, that was the humiliation that got me to the point of humility. I began to inventory my life. What's your hopes, dreams, aspirations? What have you accomplished? Do your family still mess with you? What's your address? I remember going up on Capitol Heights, man, on the ground looking for transfers to get on the bus. I opened the window, man, because my feet were stinking that bad. I remember getting out front of that hospital. I'm looking at this hospital. The disease said, no, goddamn well, you ain't going in that hospital with your feet smelling like that. I'm kind of talking about, for years, man, I had a desire, I wanted to get clean. But when I'm caught in that powerless condition, man, look, desire without action, this is a dream. And I went into this detox center, and the lady said, Miss Farrar, I need you to sit down and take your shoes off. I said, all right. So I took my first lace off. She was like, God damn, baby. Don't you worry about it. We're going to get you some help. We're going to find some long-term treatment. But that then, the white flag was up. That was my surrender. And I remember they sent me out this treatment center, man, between PG County, Howard County, and Anne Arundel County. I went to my first narcotics numbers, and it was called Savage Survivors. It was an all white biker, meaning there was one black guy, and I didn't like him because he acted white. And I remember like walking in the meeting, man, you dig, I had some Timbs that was rocking side to side with some sweatpants that was tight like this. When my conversation was pressure, they were tight like this. I said, walk up in the meeting. Space. But I couldn't understand, man, why they wouldn't hug me. I wouldn't hug your ass neither. And I remember sitting down, man, surveying the meeting, man. I raised my hand. I said, I'm Dean Mack. I don't like none of y'all in here. He said, Dean, want to pass out the key tags?
That's right.
I'm saying, no matter how I look or what I say, man, these people and judge my desire to stay clean. I remember it's time to get that man a key tag, man. It took all the courage I could muster up to walk up here and get that key tag. So I was the one that had a bunch of heart coming up. I like walking with the wax and the razor. He hit that, use my step. You clogged my screens up? Right? But it took courage to walk my low self-esteem ass up from the back of the room to the front of the room to get that key tag. And I remember walking up here to get that key tag, man. Back then, that car's number was so inviting. It was like, yeah, Dean, keep coming back. Keep coming back. Keep coming back. Keep, you know what I mean? I remember like walking up here pumped up to get that key tag. And he was out of key tag.
We got one of our meetings.
Yeah. And I remember, man, we closed the meeting out. And I was walking back to the recovery house, man, and Bob M., he had 16 years at this point. He said, Dean, come here, give me a hug. He was a white biker guy. He said, man, I love you. Take my personal line your key tag and keep coming back. That was the first time I felt unconditional love ever, man. I began to understand, man, diversity is the backbone of this program. You don't know God's going to work through, but the same thing that damn it killed you won't save you. See, that was the trashing of the promotion that Lord me to my college. I don't give a fuck about how much money, man. How good your car was, how good your job was, how good your girl looked. What attracted me, man, when you hugged me and spent time with me and said, man, I love you. That's what it did needs to need. I got my first home group. It's called Freedom Through How It Works. It's a 1-2-3 step meeting. It was all females in there, in fact. I said, this looks like home to me. We ain't got to look no further. I ain't worried about the steps. You know what I mean? I'm a bit of greeter. God damn, you growing. We need you to keep coming back. When a dude are coming out, I'd be like, man, go and sit down and get some coffee. Dude want a hug? Get a hug? But thank God for the seasoned predecessors. They said, Dean, hug him too. I started hugging people. I began to get connected in this home group. Right? Some of the seasoned members began to like leave the home group. They went on different journeys, whatever the case may have been, right? Then we started changing the policies in the groups, right? We got like 4 secretaries for a group that met once a week. Who does that? You know, the secretary stopped showing up, opening the doors. We stopped getting speakers. We stopped getting people showing up. They came in, hey, can you do the third step? I don't know you, but can you do the third step? I ain't never heard you share before. What I'm kind of talking about, man, is how our group started losing our integrity, our fidelity, right? Then they had me up there with 2 years clean that worked some steps. Every time you didn't share right on the steps. Shoot you straight down. You didn't say the right principle. It's amazing, man, how I was trying to build my low self-esteem off on you. That's a horrible thing, man. When you're a newcomer, man, you dig? And you're trying to share the best you can because you don't want to get high today, right? But you got a superstar, Mr. Page 26, right? That's going to come behind you and try to get some help every goddamn time you're trying to share. Start running them out the goddamn meeting. And in doing that, raising my hand, crushing, and all that stuff you did, I started like sharing at the podium, shooting down the old timer. You did. You should be practicing this way. You ain't living the steps. Let me show you how to do it. I'm kind of somewhat being judgmental. They say everybody get a turn. One day I came home, the kids was dead, my baby mother, you know, 2 kids, but none of mine, well, I went with chicken bones. I'm like, what the fuck you talking about? I'm not doing that. Man, I snapped, man, in my house. You did? And I felt myself getting locked up, clean. And when I got locked up clean, man, it was like the disease said, all that profound shit you said, don't go to the enemy no more, because they're going to judge you. I'm kind of talking about, man, how the disease of addiction, man, began to isolate me from y'all. How I had the courage, man, to like come back in here, right, and share the truth. And the exact people that I was judging were the ones who started putting me together. Man, it's a hell of a thing when you think you're up here, and you start pushing people away because you share behind them, and you're so self-righteous and arrogant. You dig? But when you fall, it's a long, hard-ass fall. So when I got back, I had to kind of like find another home group. Stay in the process. You dig? And I found another home group. It was called Awake Our Wives. It was a seasoned group. Everybody had time. They weren't real judgmental. They was patient. You understand what I'm saying? They had to greet at the door. It was a step meeting, right? I needed all these things to begin to grow. Go. Like I was talking about, like, the autonomy of that group. You know? It was like this group was carrying an effective message to me, man, and the way they was walking the program. You see people with 30 years in the program, right, and still greeting. Still showing up. See, that was an effective message to me, man. You understand what I'm saying? Being a newcomer, friendly group. Whereas though, we got the guy back there, the identity statement. If you need help in the lonely literature, let us know and we'll help you out. But we got the greeter at the door. But we let you have the last 10 minutes of the meeting. I've been to some meetings, man. If you ain't, you know, if you're just trying to share, it would have shut your ass down. I've been to some meetings, man, where as though they don't want to sign meeting slips because they're drinking up all the coffee and up all the goddamn cookies. What's your motive? Look, and seeing this, right, and saying something to them, but they keep doing what they're doing, man, because the group keep moving. But the thing I understand, man, I can't impose my will on that group. I went to a treatment center, man, a couple weeks ago, man, and spoke in a treatment center. You know what I mean? And after the meeting, man, a few young guys came up to me, man, asked if they had my phone number. You know, they was gang members and stuff like that. You know, by the way, been in that life with me, I'm looking at them like, you got my phone number? Because I ain't been there in a minute. But you can't pick and choose who God's going to put in your life when you carry the message. I had to still give my number, man, and be there for him, man. A lot of times, man, we got to kind of like watch, man, how we treat the newcomer. You know what I mean? When we got these events, man, you understand what I'm saying? And we taking donations out of our pockets, you did? And the newcomer come up there with two pairs of sweatpants on, three shirts on, smelling like piss, right? And he got a dollar for the hot dog. We talking about, that'll be $2.50, sir. No compassion. How we had $2 blur our message. That ain't coming from our basket, it's coming from our pockets from donations, man. A lot of times being in a meeting, man, you know, sometimes, right, it's be anniversaries like that, you know, people come up there with the Bible. Sharing from the podium. In the NA meeting. It's cool if you don't go to church. But you're breaking out sixth edition by endorsing that literature. You got anniversaries where as though people come up there getting AA speakers. Don't even know our language. It's a totally different language, right? But they blurring our message. Thank God, man, we don't endorse all these treatment centers because we can stand on our own. I just broke with my fiance, man, a couple months ago. You know what I mean? And I started dating. You know what I mean? Going out dating and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying, man? You know, I went to a dance and I met this lady. You know, and we went out of our house and stuff like that, man. You know what I mean? When I went out there, you know, it was a big house. You know, nice house and she had a lot of things and career and stuff like that. You know what I mean? And I'm in it, right? But my spirit wasn't in it, man. You know what I mean? And I found myself like dating this young lady, man. It became less about her and more about what the hell she had. More about the thing. You know what I mean? It's a horrible thing, man, when your spirit is loading you that you ain't supposed to be in it, right? But the little man on your shoulder talking about, well, this look good on paper. The little man talking about, well, she got a nice house. She got a nice car. She's talking about this room is good for your son. I'm kind of tumble, man, how I won't let money, property, and prestige, man, divert me from my primary purpose. On a whole nother level. But that God conscious, man, not allowing you to do it, man, and doing something different like in our meetings, man, you dig? We don't need no whole bunch of extravagant donuts and all this extravagant stuff, man, all this thing, right? I know some meetings, man, they're small and intimate. All these are goddamn coffee pot, the literature, and a couple meetings, right? A couple people, and we got to have a hell of an A meeting. Yeah. We just started joining a small group, man. We continue to go every week and show up, right? And when the guys talking about, then we think they're meeting to grow. I said, all we got to do is trust God and keep the doors open and keep the coffee popping and be here and hug the newcomer. The coffee will get better and the group will grow. You know, they can't let money divert me from what I'm trying to do. Because sometimes, man, you dig when you know, motherfuckers be sharing, you know, you need to put this in, you need to put $2 in the basket, you need to put more money in the basket. I understand we need basket to pay our bills, money to pay our bills, but ain't all about the money, newcomer. Right. You supporting your group, man, if you just pick up a chair and set the chairs up. There's all types of ways, man, we can be fully self-support, man, other than just the money. I came in here, man, to find my niche in service. You know, the eighth tradition began to let me know, man, we are a diverse fellowship. We got all types of people in the program in our cosmos. We got doctors, lawyers, you know what I mean? All types of different people, man. When we walk through that door, man, you just at it. Struggling with the disease of addiction, right? Trying to help the next person get clean. But not saying, man, that the professional people, man, can't help me. I was going through a custody case with my son, man. I was sharing about it, right? And it was this girl, man. She was a lawyer in the program. After I shared about it, man, she pulled me up. And she told me exactly the steps to take when I go to court, when I go to my custody hearing my son. And she said, I'm not doing it as a professional lawyer. I'm doing this another addict helping another addict. I'm talking about the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. And I remember like going to court, man, and doing everything that she told me to do, right? And the judge, man, was ready to award me custody of my son. But I understand, man, how much my son loves his mothers and brothers and sisters and all that shit. I understand, man, it was best for me, it's best for the group as a whole. So I went to pick my son up, man, a couple weeks ago. In fact, last week, you know what I mean? And my baby mother came out that was crying. You know, she said, I'm tired of living in America. You know what I mean? She's from South America, ready to move and, you know, and do this and do that. And I'm listening to her and stuff like that, man, you know, and I'm hugging her, you know, trying to encourage her and stuff like that. But she says, you know what, Dean, man, you're a wonderful dad. You know, if you want, I can leave Donovan with you. You know. One thing about my son mother, man, she know when it's 4th and 1 with 3 seconds left to go on the clock. She know where to get a ball to. Then I'm gonna put it in end zone. Yeah. By being fully self-supporting. You know, and what I've been trying to do, man, is like loosen the impact off of my son, man. I've been talking to him. I've been letting him know, man, you know, your mother and them might move across seas, you know, and you had to stay with me till you get bigger. You know, and he said, that's all right, Daddy, I'm good. Wow. You know, I was at the gym the other day, man. His teachers came in there. And they stopped and they said, Mr. Raw, how you doing, man? You're doing a wonderful job with your son. I never thought, man, that this program would give me enough self-esteem to where it's not going to look the world in the eye. You know, to where it's not going to walk into the school You know what I mean? Know all the teachers, all, you know what I mean? I never thought that that was possible before I got here. You know, even like being in special events and stuff like that, man, like having the humility, man, to understand, man, that some events, man, we got to hire the simplicity of DJs. Because we tried it with the NA DJ. DJ 1-2-3 shuffle. Ain't nobody want to come out and support the event no more. So to begin to hire professional DJs, you know what I mean? So we can have a special event. You know, like Nakara's numbers hires accountants and lawyers and stuff like that to handle things, man, that we can't handle, we ain't qualified to handle. You know? So, what I will say, man, as a result of this, man, you know, life is good. You know what I mean? And thanks a lot, Ms. Shea.
Give both of our speakers a big round of applause, please. All right, we need to close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. Please circle up. You betcha, circle up. Thank you.
Oh, sure.
Thank you so much. I'm glad that you had a good time.
Come on, boy.
Can I breathe out
here? How you doing? Ah, wonderful.
This is going to be already gone.
We ready?
It's not closed right
here. Close your gap over there. God,
grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Keep coming back and working.
Good job, people!
All right.
Thank you very much.
You were California?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm Hollywood.
Yeah. Thank you, man.
Damn.
Damn, man.
My man, damn, boy. Woo! The Jimmy Jam. Damn.
Appreciate
it. Jimmy Jam, man.
Good job, boy! Woo! Woo, get this picture, man. Get this picture. Get this picture of me and Jimmy Jam stick.
Hey! I pre-register every year. Can you get this picture of me and Jimmy Jam?
You gonna get a picture of me and Jimmy Jam?
Yeah, I did. She's our secretary for programs.
She's working hard.
She do, man.
I know, man. Look, I'm gonna tell you.
They call me Palm Springs. That's the name. Rap. That's from Bob Miller.
Who?
Palm Springs.
Make sure I get it.
You done my sermon on SoCal this year.
Yeah, I got a lot of
work. First time. Yeah. 10 years.
Make sure I got the picture. Got a picture of me and Jimmy Jim.
Thank you, man.
Wait a second.
Okay.
Did I get it?
Yeah, you got it.
All right, okay.
Give me
a...
Oh, yeah, boy.
Jimmy! Let's get a photo. Do we need to move over a little bit? Okay. No.
All right. Yeah, boy. She's like, you didn't tell me. Here she goes. You didn't tell me you was coming.
No, I didn't know you was coming.
Yeah, I pre-register every year for this convention.
I knew that. You was going to be here, right?
I texted
you like, damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. Look. You could have stayed in the room.
What about your friends from home? Bruce.
Oh, yeah,
Come up here, baby.
You got some good
What's this? Okay, I'm sorry.
All right.